Welcome back, everyone. If you're just joining us, this is a program about restorative justice here at CKRZ. And with us today, we have Barbara General, Lady Cano, Lee Hill, Lance Logan Key, and Abby Avery. And Tom had to step out, but some very good information that he had to share with us today. Wouldn't you agree, Barb?
Oh, definitely. I love Tom. So we're going to move on to a question that Lady brought up during the break, and she said a female audience member had a question of why do offenders have more rights than the victim? And if you want to take a stab at that, Abby?
I would start off by saying because an accused person has the presumption of innocence. You're innocent until you're proven guilty. So I would ask anybody that's listening or even people here that if you were charged with something that you didn't feel that you did, you would be outraged, absolutely outraged. So you have to start from that premise. So an accused person is accused until they are proven guilty. Victims do have rights. It would appear at first blush that the accused has more rights than the victims, but they are the ones that are facing charges and going through the criminal system. So they need to make sure they have those checks and balances in place, because it would be a horrible thing for somebody to be convicted of a crime that they didn't actually do. Victims do have a right in the process. They have victim impact statements. They have services, Indigenous services, victim services, victim witness assistance program. So victims are assisted and kept informed. For example, when somebody is charged and they are brought into bail court, they have a victim service person there, and they follow what happens to the accused. And if they are released, they make sure that they have contacted the victim and that in that victim's input is put before the court and known. They make sure that they have the terms, safety mechanisms in place, no contact, not attend, those sorts of things. Victims are informed of court dates. They are informed of input, guilty plea dates. They are assisted with trial preparation, and they get to submit impact statements that the judge and the Crown and read, or they have the option of reading it into court. So they absolutely do have rights, but an accused is always presumed innocent, so that's a good thing.
So if I can add something to it, I can only speak based on my experience and the work I have been doing. But that's not always the case. We have many victims on our sideline. They are not involved in any of the processes. Sometimes when an offender is being released in the community, the victim is not aware of that. So oftentimes the prosecutor is making the decisions for the victim. And sometimes the victim don't even want the offender in jail. So I have an example. I have a case in which a victim, she wasn't informed about anything at all. So she was very thankful when we got in touch with her and informed her about the process. She didn't want restitution. She wasn't looking for that. The only thing she wanted for the offender was to get him involved in some counseling to get help for himself. So, and that's an example of a victim that was not involved in her process at all.
Well, that's a choice, right? I think a lot of times when we think about the victim, they have the choice to participate in victim services and VWAP, the Victim Witness Assistance Program. Mm-hmm. Nobody forces them, and we've had people say no to us, Nick, no. So it's their choice. If they want to go on their own and help themselves, that's fine too. But I don't think they have less rights than the offender. Yes. Because they have a right to participate, they have a right to information, like Abby was addressing. They have a right to respect, and you know, under our Indigenous Victim Services model, they have a lot of rights, and we push for that piece for them.
No, we're pushing for it too with RJ, and just talking about, just based on the experiences that I have so far with the program, and sometimes there are some cases in which they are not totally informed of the options they have in the community. So we're trying to push for it too.
But that doesn't come from the Justice Department.
No.
Yeah.
No. No, it's just at the court. Yeah. They don't get that information at court.
So this is the next question. It's a good segue into my next question. In regards to, where is it? Why do you think it's hard for people, victim, accused, offender organizations, and the legal system to buy into restorative justice and restorative practices?
Mm-hmm. So again, I can only speak based on my experience. So I think based on what I have been doing in the community, I think oftentimes the victim is thinking about punishment. So we don't have this concept of being restorative. We just want the person to be punished for what they have done. But it's based on the colonization. We had adopted those that kind of thinking or that kind of approach. And when it comes to the offender, oftentimes they don't believe in themselves. They give up. So they have become those labels. So they see them as criminals. The community see them as criminals. So they are becoming those labels. They don't even believe in themselves. So we usually, during the process, ask the offender about their strengths and their abilities. And that's the longest moment of silence that we have during the interviews, because they don't think about anything good. They don't think they are valuable people. So I think that's part of the shame that they carry too. And they simply give up hope. They don't think they deserve to be repaired or to be somebody productive in the community. So for the justice system, I think it's because we all know it's a punitive approach. So in the justice system, focus more on asking the person. They don't even ask. They say, okay, what rule was broken? Who didn't? What punishment they deserve? So they focus just on that, just the punitive aspects of that. And there are no looking at the underlying root causes of the criminal behaviors. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, like speaking to that Lori presentation we did, when we asked the students if they thought whether or not the justice system used the Haudenosaunee legal principles, we asked them, how many of you think that the government's justice system actually adheres it? It uses any of these principles whatsoever. Nobody put their hands up. And they kind of laughed, because then all of a sudden they made the connection, right? They made the connection that it doesn't use anything. It doesn't use that love, compassion, or understanding. It is very fact-based. And there was something else you talked about why we think that it's hard for people, the victims. Mm-hmm. I think it goes back again to what I was saying earlier about that, the fear. Of rupture and repair, not having the skills of being able to address conflict, yes. And like not wanting to do that, that fear inside, being scared of having to look at that person. Because mm-hmm. We know sometimes we lack those skills of being able to fix our conflicts that we have.
Yeah. I think sometimes too it can give the appearance of being like transactional, semi-transactional. Mm-hmm. You commit this offense, and if they catch you, this is what you pay. And if you're in that lifestyle, whether you're grew up in it or you've been introduced to it through circumstance or however you get introduced to it, you start getting that mindset. Well, okay, I got caught. I'll do this much time. No, done and done. Mm-hmm. There's no focus on rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. How do I change my circumstances so I'm not taking that route? It just becomes transactional. And the result is an institutionalization of the offender. I don't even like using the word offender, but mm-hmm. they become institutionalized. This is the process. A lot of times I'll do this stuff, I don't get caught. If I get caught, okay, I got caught. Go and do what I got to do. Mm-hmm. That needs to shift. So it becomes more, I'm responsible for this, not just responsible for what I have done, mm-hmm. but who it's affected, mm-hmm. and understanding how, the depth of that effect.
That's RJ.
That's what we do, try to help them understand the impact of their actions and find different ways to meet their needs. So I think with the program we are trying to build like the social conditions for them to improve their lives and to remove them from the criminal behaviors. That's different to the justice system. When people go to a justice system because the trauma and all the needs are not addressed properly, it becomes a revolving door. So we want to prevent that.
Yeah, and allowing them to go through that self-reflective process themselves too, right? And like checking like that their behaviors, the underlying issues, what brought them to those behaviors. like not just thinking that that is who they are either. Like when you mm-hmm. ask them those questions about their strengths, that really does make them take a look at themselves and remember mm-hmm. who they are as a person. Because it's like you said, they become institutionalized. They just start yeah. to think that it's just that, oh, I've done this, and now I just got to do this, and then it's done. I just want it done and over with. Like, I just want it all done and over with.
Yeah.
I know that our programs are trying to help people when they fall. We're there to try and catch them, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what we want to do. That's our goal. But at the same time, there's barriers to getting yeah. this information out to the community. I just want to get some feedback on what are the barriers to having restorative justice thrive in this at Six Nations.
Lack of referrals, I would think, would be one, would be a lack of referrals. Not understanding exactly what they do. Mm-hmm. Are they there just for people that have been referred through the criminal court system? Or are they, can they be referred by some other mechanism? Not understanding those pieces. What exactly restorative justice does with each person, and I realize it's a case-by-case basis mm-hmm. and it's very individualized, yeah. mm-hmm. but I think that's a big piece. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very big piece. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think there's a misunderstanding of what this is actually about, too. And there's this perception mm-hmm. that anything that's restorative is a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah. And it's not.
No.
Without getting too specific about some examples, being told that you have to talk about your offense with someone uh-huh. who cares about you uh-huh. on a regular basis, that can be much more difficult than going to a counselor. Yes.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the perception is that they're going to, and they say that with IPC too, that, I've heard counselors say, well, this is just a get out of jail free card. I'm like, no, it's not. Uh-huh. Or the GLADU report is a get out of jail. It's not. It's about, it's taking the person's, life context into consideration and then going from there. And it's not always going to change what the yeah. judge is. He's taking that into consideration,
yep.
right? But with RJ, I think that there's a lack of education for our community, and we don't have the communications person to always constantly educate, because you guys, there's two of you is doing the work, right? Mm-hmm. And this is, I think that's a barrier to getting more community members or organizations on board. But there's a huge need for it, and this is something that I want to move forward, because I think RJ is the way that we're going to move towards our own judicial system at Six Nations, is having that understanding and compassion for the people who are committing these offenses. Because if we look, we're at the root of the problem, we can see how much trauma they have encountered. If we look at the people going through our bail program, well, 90% of them have been in the child welfare system, or their parents have been in residential schools. You need to connect the dots here. And it goes back to them, if they're in the child welfare system, being disconnected from community and family, having no place to go when they transition out of child welfare, so they transition to the streets, which then they transition into drugs and into crime. There's all these okay. things that come into play that you have to understand. These are the oppressive policies that have come down. And we should have more compassion for our people mm-hmm. all the way around, for each other, when we understand the history and understand the full impact of what these policies have done to Indigenous people, and especially at Six Nations. And I feel like we don't take that into consideration and have that understanding for each other, or having that compassion or empathy to say, oh man, this is historical trauma going on right now yeah. when I see something happen like that, right? Mm-hmm. It is. It really is. My sister cracks me up because she'll say, if she sees somebody fighting, she goes, oh man, that's historical trauma going right there. It's going down. Because it's that lateral violence. It's the crimes mm-hmm. that are happening in this community. And we really have to really acknowledge that piece. Yeah. And it has to be in our lens when we're working with individuals.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a result of that colonization process.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at it from an Indigenous or a cultural basis for, yes? Oh, sorry. of understanding, like I said, I'm big on defining words. So responsibility is one of those words. A lot of times when we have these institutional processes, they take the responsibility away from the common person. And the reality is that in an Indigenous community, in a community that hasn't had that colonization process, everyone has a responsibility. There's no such thing as a passive observer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, take our ceremonies. You know, a speaker stands up to speak. He's taking on that responsibility to speak on behalf of the people. But the people have a responsibility to sit down, be quiet, and give him the floor. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a responsibility. Mm-hmm. There's no difference in that when it comes to something like RJ, yeah. Mm-hmm. or our legal system, or our participation in helping victims and offenders. No, we all have a responsibility in that.
Yeah.
A lot of times what happens is, what I see is, it might not be a conscious process, but it's essentially, well, you're the probation officer, or you're the police officer, it's your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But me as a member of the community, I also have a responsibility in that. It might not be as direct, but I have a responsibility in that, and people need to bring that to the conscious.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lance. In the few minutes that we have left, if our listeners have further questions for our panelists, how do we go about reaching you?
Oh, you can contact us at 226-227-2192, and the admin assistant will refer you to the RJ workers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lance, did you want to put out any information as to how we can go about contacting you if we have questions about the system?
Sure. I'm with Six Nations Grand River Correctional Services. So our phone number is 519-445-2628. And you can reach any of us who work in that office through that number.
Hmm. Abby?
I have the same contact as Barb.
Okay.
I would just like to give a big thank you to Tom if he's listening on his way out to where he's going, because he said he was going to tune in. So, Tom, if you're listening, thank you so much for being on the show. It really means a lot, and I appreciate all of your knowledge and wisdom that you shared with us last night and today.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to acknowledge that, thank you for CKRZ for letting us have this show today.
Yes.
I think the more education our community has, the better, and will help us with our programming and helping out the community members who are going through the court system. So we are thankful for being here for today.
Yes, yeah. Well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And thank you for Tom.
Yeah. And shout out to the justice team.
Yeah, oh, those are awesome. I was going to say that. Hi, guys.
And thanks, Lance, for coming in, too. Yeah.
And
Abby.
Yeah, that wasn't a question.
Sorry.
So just how many minutes we got left? Because I have one question I just wanted to put out there. Like, how do you see RJ working at Six Nations in the future? What more do we need?
I hope there's a lot more referrals, and I hope that people that utilize the services don't just wait for a referral or something from the court to say diversion, that people start coming as soon as they have charges and avail themselves of services that are being offered, because I think it will assist in the long run. The other thing I wanted to add is that I don't know whether this is a misperception or not. Somebody was talking about it is viewed as get out of jail free card. Restorative justice as it stands now isn't offered for more serious offenses. So I think community members mm-hmm. have to realize that really serious offenses, murders, sexual assaults, really serious matters are not referred to, well, through the courts, mm-hmm. at least through to yeah. restorative justice. So I just want to make that clear that when the courts are referring to restorative justice, it's usually minor offenses, property offenses,
level
administrative offenses. Yes, yeah, nonviolent, where it doesn't affect community safety or individual safety. So,
yeah. Just adding to what Abby mentioned is that restorative justice is a more demanding process because it's not easy to face the person that you harm. And I think it takes lots of courage for a person to actually accept what they did and to repair the harm that has been created.
Thank you, lady. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed the program. I'm Al Sue. Have yourselves a great day ahead.
The program you've been listening to was pre-recorded for presentation at this time, and the comments were those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Sonics Incorporated or CKRZFM.